more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Milwaukee police and police around the world are searching for the instrument we're hearing now. It's the Lipinski Stradivarius, which has been on loan from anonymous benefactors to Milwaukee Symphony concertmaster Frank Almond since 2008. The instrument was stolen from Almond in an armed robbery Monday night outside Wisconsin Lutheran College, where Almond had just finished a concert. The instrument is said to be worth millions of dollars. Shortly after Almond received permission to play the violin publicly, he visited the Lake Effect studio along with Stefan Hirsch, a violinist himself and co-owner of Darton and Hirsch Fine Violins in Chicago. Speaking then, Almond described the first time he played the Lipinski Stradivarius.
I just played it for a few minutes, and even after sitting in a vault for a year and not really being played much for probably 10 or 12 years, it was pretty amazing. I mean, you could tell what it was, definitely.
It's got such a big sound, and I know that's something, it's one of the largest ones that he made, right?
It's on the largest pattern. He was prolific at exactly this period. 1715 might be one of the years of his absolute most output, but not all the instruments from this period are on this big pattern, and the most desirable ones and biggest sounding ones have this large pattern and a huge amount of airspace and flat arching, which produces a lot of projection.
Well, in 1715, what would an instrument like this be used for? That's sort of the height of the Baroque period. Would it be a solo instrument?
Mostly what they were doing was chamber music in a broader sense.
These were the super high-craft post-Renaissance trinkets of the wealthy. If you had your own castle, certainly you wanted to have your own orchestra in-house. And if you were really keeping up with the Joneses, you wanted to outfit them with the best that was available. And
keeping up with the Medicis.
Yes,
there you go.
As it were. And literally and figuratively, Medicis did own Stradivarius. And there are documents that exist now that show us that Stradivarius orders came from far and wide, and they were sometimes whole big sets of instruments. And that's how things like this came into being. What they were used for were probably, you know, concerts in there, relatively large by personal standards, but small by today's concert hall standards, performance spaces.
Which were basically large rooms, you know.
Like salons.
In castles.
A salon, a ballroom, yeah. Something like
that. Well, Frank, once you started playing it, is there anything you had to adjust in the way you play to work with this instrument?
Yeah, they're all different. You know, I mean, I've been really fortunate in my life to have a number of different great instruments, including a couple of Strads. And every single one, you change your playing a little bit, and it changes to you. That's also something I think a lot of people don't realize, is this mysterious thing where the instruments really do sort of adapt to how you approach them in a certain way. It's very difficult to describe that, and I don't really know why that happens, but it definitely does. You know, an instrument like the Dushkin Strad that I had sounded completely different when somebody else would play it. And I'm sure this one is the same. So day by day now, I find myself approaching things in a different way and the instrument responding in a different way. It's just a different kind of instrument when you play on it regularly versus when it's just sitting there not being played. You know, it's just something happens with it and it sort of comes alive. I think also you almost have to learn how to work less with these instruments. There's an ease of execution with a lot of different things, different technical aspects of playing. And in that sense, it can really act more as a really high-end tool for what you're trying to do. It gives you options. An instrument like this is so powerful and has so many different kinds of shadings and colors, coupled with a range and an evenness that makes it, I wouldn't say easy, but easier to do what you're trying to do artistically, if that makes any sense.
You're it's not like fighting the instrument.
Right, but it's also like somebody giving you a much wider set of, a much broader palette of colors to work with, to use that analogy. It's just more things you can do. So in that sense, it maximizes everything you're able to do and probably maximizes your strengths as a musician, but sometimes it can also magnify your limitations.
Yeah, the part that Frank is alluding to here is that all of the benefit that he speaks of, which he achieves with a parent ease. I know how hard he works, but not everybody out in the audience might know. In fact, you can get all that achievement as long as you have the precision it takes. But Stradivarius do not suffer fools very well. And you do have to be fair, especially with this type of Stradivarius. You have to be fairly precise, accurate, and firm. You have to know what you're doing, kind of like with a thoroughbred horse. Will respond great as long as you give it the right input. User error, though, results in near disaster.
I'm perfectly capable of sounding very, very bad on this instrument. But I think this is an important point, though. A lot of people think that if you gave a lousy musician a great instrument, it would completely change everything, and it doesn't. It just sounds like, you know, a not so great musician on a better instrument. And the other interesting thing is that I think a great musician, still a great violinist, when you hand them any different instrument, they still sound like who they are. Like, famous examples around here, for instance, when Pinka Zukerman would show up and he'd demonstrate something on somebody's violin from the section, it would unmistakably him. It clearly is not the instrument he's playing on.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about determining the provenance, because I know that was part of this story. Yes, there's paperwork, but paperwork can be forged over centuries. Is there something that you look for, and Stefan, this is probably more of a question for you, something that distinguishes a Stradivari you can say, yeah, that's a real one, not a fake?
People ask that sort of a question, and they're looking for the magic secret, if you will. In fact, there's a million things on a violin like that distinguish it, that where it screams what it is. The process of looking at something like this involves a lot of detailed examination, because we always wonder if there's parts of it that have been replaced or things that have gone on, or we want to verify what our sensibilities are telling us at very first.
You should add that that's very common, by the way. There are a lot of composite Strads out there, because over the 300 years, somebody might replace the head or replace a piece of wood here and there.
Well, the old methods, it meant that the whole front of the instrument would be replaced if it cracked. They wouldn't think to start putting cleats and repairs like we do now. They would just say, well, it's not practical, put a new front on. And so, yes, we very often see that. And then some nefarious practitioners, particularly in the end of the 19th and early part of the 20th century, used to pull old instruments apart and make two out of one. So we, as a authenticator, expert of these things, it's a job for us to try and decode and make sure we don't pass along problem children that way.
You know, it's worth noting also that if you have a Strad, say, of this level, where, for instance, the top would be different, you know, that's like conservatively probably $1 million difference, right?
These days could easily be more.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on a lot of other factors.
Yeah.
In the case of this instrument, because it is so important and well documented, those issues were much less difficult. I knew before I went into the bank vault what I was supposed to see. There's extant literature with photos of this violin. So it was more of a question of, is this the violin that's photographed? But with 1715 Stradivarius, I mean, you get down to only one person can actually be responsible for that, because the level of the work is such that nobody can replicate it. And as far as these identifying characteristics, you can't expect to solve the secrets of how these are put together any more than you could solve the secrets of how an important piece of furniture was put together or an important painting was painted. And it's not about using the right canvas or the right paints. It's about the interaction with the material. And so people frequently say, what was Stradivari's secret? Well, what was Rembrandt's secret? I mean,
yeah, that's a point that's really, I think, a lot of people miss, because everybody talks about, why can't we make these things like this today? Well, you know, nobody's painting the Mona Lisa today,
right?
Either. I mean, there's a lot of
Stradivari
things that go into it,
and he's that part that's missing.
It is, and I think the confusion that people have is the Stradivari still functions better than its current counterpart than anyone currently can make it, despite some people's claims to the contrary. I mean, there's a reason that the market holds up. It's not just the value of the things as antiquities. They really are gorgeous and better. And that functionality creates confusion for people, because there's no other object in the fine arts world like that. A Biedermeier chair Actually, it's probably less comfortable than an IKEA chair.
Probably. And I'd be afraid to sit in a Biedermeier chair.
There you go. Some people
are afraid. But you're not afraid to play. Well, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, what is it like to pick up something that's worth millions of dollars and actually have to perform on it?
That's great.
harder to crash that than a Ferrari.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, if I thought about it all the time, I'd go completely crazy. You know, I got my first really great instrument loaned to me when I think I was 11 or 12. And you just try to not do anything stupid most of the time. It's like having a small child with you most of the time. I just have to remember and focus on that. And other than that, you know, I just sort of go about my life. And I can't really worry about anything out of my control happening.
The thing to stress here is it's not really about the money for anybody who cares. The responsibility goes way beyond the money. So they were worth hundreds of thousands years ago. Now they're worth millions. Later they'll be worth more. That's not the issue. It's posterity. This is a very finite supply of objects, 600 some odd Stradivari objects in the world. If one is gone, when it's custodially entrusted to you, and then you have to sort of live with yourself having taken something away from posterity by being irresponsible. Frank understands that. Anybody who has these things understands that. It's more than money. It's,
right. They're not making them anymore,
and
they never will.
That's right.
And,
right.
You know, that illuminates a sort of disparity between two different philosophies about these instruments. There are people who really believe that the best way to preserve these is not to have them out and circulating. As a player, I instinctively rebel against that. But I kind of understand the point.
It's funny because Frank's being polite about it, but that exact debate he talks about is one that he and I have had many times, because I'm in my world, I'm hyper-conservative. I don't believe that they should never be played or shouldn't be loaned out. But I believe certain of the purest examples would just be better if they were not in circulation with musicians, simply because they need to be preserved for future generations.
Milwaukee Symphony Concertmaster Frank Almond and Stefan Hirsch, co-owner of Darnton and Hirsch Fine Violins in Chicago, speaking with Lake Effect's Bonnie North in 2008 about the Lipinski Stradivarius, which was on loan to Almond. The instrument was stolen in an armed robbery Monday night outside Wisconsin Lutheran College. The investigation is ongoing. One last break, and then one of the city's top networkers expounds on the secret to her success when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.